All right, here we go. You've known me well enough. You know Succession well enough. Which child would I be most like? Which Roy's child would I be most like? In my mind, I think you have an answer in your mind already. I think so.
I mean, I think your speech patterns are closest to Roman.
Okay.
Yeah, is it insulting if I say you're somewhere between Connor and Rome?
Nope, I was going to go with Connor. I was going to go with Connor. I'd be the one running for president, stupidly.
Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers, the gambling industry podcast from CasinoReports.com. I'm Eric Raskin. I am joined by my co-host, Jeff Edelstein. And, you know, it just occurred to me, Jeff, Low Rollers is kind of like Gamble On's innie, if you think about it.
Oh, wow.
9 weeks ago, we woke up on a table. Now here we are. Did I just blow your mind?
Yeah, a little bit.
There's going to be more severance talk to come later on this episode of the pod, so I don't know that we need to drill down too deep. But I just wanted to hit you with it with that one real quick. It's either the best or the worst severance analogy that I've come up with so far. There's kind of no in between with this one. It sounds like you're leaning toward best.
Listen, I mean, put severance on burnt toast, and I'm going to be like, I love it.
Right.
I don't care. I love that show, man. I'm so deep into it. Everyone should be into it. That's all I'm saying. If you're not watching it, you're doing yourself a disservice. But yeah, we're going to be talking about things other than severance, of course, today, including an interview with Pat Mayo, the proprietor of the Mayo Media Network. I love what he does over there. He's tackling sports through the prism of daily fantasy and sports betting with just like tons of personality and tons of guests. I love it. But first, before we do that, plenty of news to discuss, as always.
Yeah, pretty damn busy news week here with some pretty damn significant news atop it. And we will combine two related stories into one discussion here. On Tuesday night, the Nevada Gaming Control Board issued a cease and desist order to Kalshi, deeming their event contracts for sports betting and elections, quote, unlawful in the state, which we believe is the first time a state has told CFTC-regulated Kalshi to get lost. Whether Kalshi will listen is anyone's guess. Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, also on Tuesday, New York State Senator Joe Addabbo introduced a bill that would ban online sweepstakes games in New York, where they are presently accessible to customers, unregulated, considered legal by some under sweepstakes law, apparently not considered legal by Addabbo. So what's happening in New York is the latest major development in a trend across the country. The Nevada news potentially shakes things up in a whole new way. But one way or another, major states are fighting back hard against gray area operators, loophole operators, whatever you want to call them. Jeff, what's jumping out at you here? What's your reaction to all this?
Yeah, what you said there kind of is my main reaction. It's the states that are doing this. This isn't Mississippi and, you know, Michigan, no disrespect, right? This is Nevada, home of Las Vegas, and this is New York, home of New York. I'm sure you saw in like our internal Slack chat there, you know, Nevada was the first state to, you know, make a move against, you know, DFS back in the day,
right?
With New York falling on its heels. And, you know, we know what happened with DFS. You know, there was, you know, the lobbying effort state by state. And, you know, it worked its way through the system. But I wonder now if other states are going to see, much like what happened with DFS, they're seeing what Nevada's doing, and do they follow Nevada's lead? That wouldn't shock me, right? I would assume, you know, if you're a state legislator and this is part of like your world, you know, looking at betting or gambling or whatever, you know, if you're going to follow someone, Nevada seems like a reasonable place to follow. And then, you know, New York, you know, maybe it's my East Coast bias, but I still have the opinion that, you know, when New York lawmakers make a move, other, you know, it makes it easier for other lawmakers to follow. Right. And so, and Addabbo's bill is hyper specific. You know, it leaves no wiggle room for a sweepstakes operator, you know, to get through. Now, is the bill going to pass? Who knows? As you said, is Kalshi going to listen to Nevada? Who knows?
Right.
But, you know, as I've been saying, I think every week now since we started this thing, these are the biggest stories going right now in the sports betting space, in the gambling space, and what's going to happen with these gray market, you know, operations. This is, you know, just another, you know, another fight in the war, right?
Yeah, it's the sort of the ramifications that you talked about of other states following suit. That's what I really have my eye on with this Nevada Kalshi thing. And but the question is whether anyone's going to do anything before they see how it shakes out there. That you know, for now, Kalshi's still fully operational in Nevada, and they set a deadline of next Friday. It sure seems like Kalshi's position is, we're regulated by the CFTC, not by the states. We don't have to listen to you. I would be somewhat surprised if they do indeed cease and or desist by the March 14th deadline. But it's just huge in terms of, if Nevada succeeds, if Kalshi gets shut down there, then why wouldn't every single state follow suit? You know, there's nothing positive for the states in Kalshi
right.
being there. It can only take business away from the licensed sportsbook. So every state should want to shut Kalshi down, I would think. But as for, you know, whether Nevada will succeed, what's going to happen? I mean, the push and pull here, you know, it's a company with Trump Jr. as an advisor versus a state where the casino industry, which his dad claims to be a big supporter of, drives the whole economy. It makes for a pretty fascinating clash. Back when we were a country of laws, I would have been absolutely glued to this. Now, you know, who whatever's ruled may not have any impact, but I'm glued to it, I guess, regardless, just not sure that any outcome along the way is going to mean anything.
Well, I'm just curious, like, long term. I mean, these prediction markets, you know, like the idea behind them is basically an economic hedge, right? Like in its pure form.
Right.
You know, much in the same way, like, you know, buying and trading, you know, stock options, you know, is a hedge. It's hard to make the argument that sports betting is a hedge. I've seen, like, some arguments made. Well, if you own a bar in Buffalo and you think the Bills are going to be good, so you order more chicken wings and, you know, like
right.
that. I mean, that's really stretching it's really stretching it.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't think prediction markets are going away, but I do think there is, like, an avenue where the sports betting aspect of it never really locks in, because I
right.
think, you know, I think there's good arguments to be made against it. But again, as you say, we're living in, you know, different times.
Yeah, the sports betting, it feels like them growing overly bold, overreaching, that I'm kind of stealing this point from Dustin Gawker in his newsletter, but he, you know, he noted that the CEO of Kalshi responded to Nevada with a social media post basically whining about Nevada coming after him. And if you didn't want anyone to come after you, you were in the clear, it seemed, to do election betting and the various other things. And then
right.
you got greedy and you went for sports betting, and it may work out for you, or it may not, but I feel like you can't be pissed or surprised that people are objecting to you cutting the line to offer sports betting, which you can find your ways to say that, oh, it's hedging, it's exchange wagering, it's not really sport, it's sports betting. You're putting up,
right.
People are putting up money to bet on whether this team or that team will win a game. It's sports betting.
Yep.
And I'll just say on the New York front that on the one hand, I get why states are coming after sweeps, and, you know, their existence is the result of a fairly silly loophole with the dual currencies and all that. But if you haven't offered your citizens regulated online casino, and I realize Adabo has tried, it's not that he hasn't tried, but he's failed, unfortunately, so far. If your state doesn't have legal online casino, then I don't have a lot of sympathy for the government of that state when it's trying to shut these sweepstakes operators down. If you do have iCasino, then by all means, try to shut them down, because they're stealing business away from your regulated operators. But in a state where sweeps are their only option to play casino games, which is the case in New York, I'm not as sympathetic to the state governments going after them.
Well, you know what I always say.
What's that?
Every American deserves the right to tilt out on Lucky Larry's Lobster Mania slingo.
There you go. There's the campaign that you're running on. All right. One other story we ought to discuss briefly. Penn Entertainment had its quarterly earnings call last Friday, and CEO Jay Snowden acknowledged that the ESPN Bet partnership is not going so well for them financially. And both sides have an opt-out clause in 2026, 3 years into this 10-year deal. And Snowden all but said that if things don't improve, they will probably opt out. So that would be something for Penn to fail with both Barstool and ESPN in quick succession, proving that a brand name alone doesn't get the job done in the mobile sportsbook wars. Jeff, do you see any way this partnership turns around, or basically do you see it that if Snowden's talking about the doomsday possibility, that means it's basically dead already?
I mean, probably the latter, although, and this is like, you know, I'm in New Jersey. I have my choice of 20-odd sports books and 20-odd casinos. Currently, to me, adding everything together, nothing comes close to ESPN Bet.
Interesting.
Right? I think so. The things that I love about it, fantastic daily promos on both sports betting and casino, like legitimately, like, you know, plus EV, you know, EV positive, whatever, you know, which one is it?
I say plus EV, but yeah. I've seen it written in with the plus sign before and after. I don't know.
Either way, like good promos every day. The casino promos are like ridiculous, like ridiculously good. Hmm. The payouts are instantaneous, I don't have to wait 10 minutes or 10 days, instantaneous payouts. I've yet to be limited. Not that I'm betting like $20,000, but I've yet to be limited. You know, and the markets are just as good, and you know, as the DraftKings, FanDuels of the world, you know, the -110s or whatnot. It's quick, it's responsive. The app is fantastic. People just aren't there. You know, I mean,
right.
If I were them, I would, you know, I'd double down on some of the stuff that they're doing well. And if they're going to advertise, like say, you want your payouts in 10 seconds, come to ESPN Bet. You want daily promos that basically guarantee that you'll turn a profit, come to ESPN Bet. They're not doing that. I happen to be, you know, promo hunting every day, so I see it, you know, but it's, yeah, I mean, for my money right now, ESPN Bet is my top gambling app.
Well, you may have just turned things around for them with that advertising pitch to our millions of listeners. If suddenly we see ESPN Bet spike in the handle and revenue wars, it may be because you just sold the entire gambling community that listens to this podcast on ESPN Bet. Let's keep an eye on that. You may have just turned it all around.
But what's also interesting, I saw EKG had a report where Fanatics is like near podium position.
Right.
The Fanatics sports betting and casino, it does not come close to ESPN Bet, honestly, my opinion. And really, it's no better than DraftKings FanDuel. But obviously, what they're able to do, obviously, it would seem, they're able to like use their, you know, their database much better than ESPN has been able to use their database. I mean, what else could there be?
Yeah, and or ESPN, that name brand, ESPN itself has not helped promote this much at all. And I guess, you know, you go back to the flop that was Fox Bet to realize that having a big network name attached doesn't actually mean anything. Databases of customers is obviously a massive starting point. And, you know, then beyond that, yeah, it's all the things you're saying. People want a good app and good odds and good promos, but you have to know how to, I guess, reach that audience and make them aware. So it's amazing to me that with the ESPN name,
that they haven't
been able to find. But again, they did just get the greatest free advertisement they ever could have asked for from Jeff Edelstein on Low Rollers. So I really see this as sort of an inflection point in the history of the Penn ESPN Bet partnership.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect at least 4 or 5 extra logins before the week is over.
Just by you.
Bunch by me.
Right. Yes. Okay. All right, let's get to this week's interview, and it's you flying solo this week. I was literally flying, not solo, on the morning that you lined up to record with Pat Mayo, so I was not there for this. Here is your interview, one-on-one, with fantasy expert, sports betting content producer, podcast host, etc., from the Pat Mayo Experience, Pat Mayo.
All right. Well, I want to get started like in a kind of a broad term here. You know, we're Pat Mayo, the Mayo Media Network. You really blend the sports gambling DFS with entertainment and personality about just as good as anyone out there doing it, to the point where like I almost feel like what you do is kind of singular out there. When you started all this, did you set out with that plan in mind, or did it just kind of like gravitate towards like, where entertainment became part of the game for you?
Entertainment was always the primary focus of the show. It just, when I started the podcast 15 years ago, I just wasn't as good at entertaining. It takes a lot of reps, and you have to find the right partners, the right co-hosts, the right guests to bring on every single week, build characters throughout the years. And then you just have that rapport, and it goes so well that way. But we've always tried to be, I mean, on the show, I've always tried to be as entertaining as possible, be it up when I was just doing audio, when it became audio and video. I would say that probably 10 years ago, there was far more. It's not that there's no research on the show anymore, but it was a more serious type. And it was just fantasy football content or fantasy baseball content at the time. Really, when I started making the giant shift over, like trying to give out, here are the five best waiver wire pickups. Here's basically an info dump that you need to do. Here are the up-to-date injuries. We still do all of that stuff, but it's more of in a jokey way where people don't come for the information as much anymore, where they just come to hang and laugh and kill some time, and they'll get their information through osmosis along the way. But we have carved out one of the singular niches of no one really cares if we're right on picks, which is just a great spot to be in because we get so many wrong.
Right. Well, but you also get so many right. And, I wanted to touch on that also, in that the underdog was running the best ball tournament, where I was, I'm all in on NFL best ball all the time. The golf, I don't follow it close enough. I listen to you guys, but I'm not deep into it. So I was going to let it go. But then I see that, you posted on Twitter how people had no idea how they were drafting. Like, everyone was drafting wrong. And then you went out and gave out your picks, basically, your free content, based on the way people were drafting. I said, yeah, screw it. I'll kill a day. I'll draft 12 teams. You were right. So like the content that you get, like that content was similar content you had to pay hundreds of dollars for at some other sites, but you're giving it away for free. Now, when you're doing that, is it something that you're like, well, why are you giving it away for free? I guess would be the question.
Never charged for a pick, never charged for an article in my life. I guess for a time, I did write an exclusive article when I founded FTN that was just a part of the package. That was part of the deal of me going over there. But that was something extra throughout the course of the week. Because I've always had the one thing that I want to do is just make my audience bigger. I don't really care about selling subs. Now, I have premium packages that are tools only. So when I founded fantasynational.com, along with my partner Mike, one of the main things we wanted to do on that side is like, let's make this content agnostic. People can take the data, we're going to give it to them in the easiest way possible, and they can form their own conclusions on it. And I still do a show every single Sunday where I screen share me walking through it. And a lot of people have told me, it's like, yeah, Pat, what you're doing is completely wrong because you don't have a clue. But I do appreciate you going through, like, oh, here's how I use this part of the site, or use this part of the site, or I saw something on the screen that you just didn't see, and that helped me make a decision. So I think it's very fun in that way, where at the time when we found it, there was no place you could go on the internet that would give you everything all in one spot like that. I remember the reason that we came up with the site is we would have 35 tabs open at the top of each browser and have to click through each one to find all the stats we were looking for. And this put them easily in one place. When I founded Run the Sims for NFL, it was exactly the same thing. I want an optimizer, I want simulations, and I want to be able to manually adjust those to what I think is going to happen in a game. It's great to have an optimizer. It's more fun when you can go in, have the ability to simulate things 10,000 times in 10 seconds. But I can also say, you know what? I don't like the matchup in the Eagles Chiefs game. I actually think that the Eagles are going to win, whatever the score was, like 40 to 14. What if I just flip that score, adjust the target shares out of that, adjust the rushing rate of how the game would go if it was that score, and then make my picks, simulate my props, simulate my lineups, makes my bets that way? Now, I'm not selling you what I think is going to happen. I'm selling you the ability to create, do your research, and then you can create what's going to happen and spit out results based on that. I'm good with charging for that. If it's my picks, I lose. I'm not confident enough in my picks that I want to charge you. I'd feel like a scumbag.
Now, when you said you've been doing this for about 15 years, so when you started this was like DFS was not really even a thing at this point. This was just pure like fantasy football, like, build your draft your team in August, build your lineup every week kind of stuff.
100%. We were doing ESPN, we were doing Yahoo, we were doing CBS coverage on each of the sites. Like, even something like shows as rudimentary as what's the ADP difference between each of those sites and who are the value players on each of the sites, where people drafting on Yahoo at the time probably loved Frank Gore two rounds above where they liked him in his third year than they liked him on ESPN. And there was, I mean, this still exists to this day. It's just no one cares about it anymore. but like, even if you did it between Underdog and wherever, there are certain players on certain sites. And sometimes that has to do with one's a half point PPR site, one's a full point PPR, one is a non PPR site. So there are little nuances that way, but you know, doing PPR rankings, doing non PPR rankings, that's what we had to fill all our content with. And baseball. You know, baseball was huge for that back then.
The rotisserie stuff.
And it's stuff you could talk about, your waivers, your two start pitchers for the week. We had to come out with that, you know, every Friday for the following week. So you can make the accurate pickups over the weekend. Just interest in fantasy baseball died. I mean, my interest in fantasy baseball died.
Right.
And the content cycle for baseball was just so difficult. Like, honestly, if you were to run a baseball content, it's almost like any daily sport, be it basketball, hockey, or baseball. At this point, you would have to essentially do a show at whenever the games ended, as sort of a review from the night before, probably at like 2 a.m., something like that. Once 2 a.m. Eastern, once the West Coast games are done, maybe it's 2 a.m. where I am, Atlantic time. So you'd figure that out, you would do a recap, and then make your initial thoughts for the day, not knowing what lineups are going to be, not knowing what injuries happen, who's going to play, who's not going to play, and then almost have a live companion piece for that. Like, here are the plays I like, here are the players I like, and then go live an hour before the game start or whenever lineups get released. So when you know those scratches, that's just the degree of difficulty for that type of content to actually be useful is very difficult. So I went to golf. I mean, I loved golf. I loved talking about golf. And I found a partner in Jeff that I could talk about golf with every day. Just turn on a camera and we'll go for 2 hours. It's fine. And people really enjoyed that content. They still enjoy that content. I mean, we used to hit more winners than we do now. But you know, when we hit it, I mean, Jeff's off to a great start this year. I'm off to a horrible start. But that's just the way it goes sometimes. But we get, you know, we sit down every Monday. We talk for 2 hours about what happened, what's going to happen at the next, at the tournament the following week, and you know, all the tours from around the world. And even as you said, you're not really into the streets all that much in terms of golf, but we do try to gear it in a way that you don't even have to like golf to watch the show.
Right.
You learn a little bit about golf by watching us. But again, it's all about the hang. Is it entertaining to listen to? We like to think yes.
Absolutely. No, I mean, and that's the key. And, you know, with you, Jeff, and Cuss, I think, you know, in my mind, you know, when I'm listening, I'm envisioning like a Johnny Carson set, you know, like that's the vibe that it gives off. And I think obviously it's working, you know, looking back through the years, you know, you've grown obviously with the industry, you know, DFS comes along, PASPA gets repealed here in the States. If you had a pinpoint, like one moment in time that you said, holy crap, this, what I'm doing, it's working. And these things happening in the gambling space is helping me along. Like, was there like a rocket ship moment for you?
A little bit. It was more, there was two really pivotal points for me, like just being able to grow and being so early to the fantasy football scene and having a podcast is the reason that I'm able to do what I'm doing now. Had I have started this podcast 5 years ago, it would be not, I don't know if I could do this as my full-time job. I just had so many grandfathered in subscribers to my audio feed that I've been able to have one of the most successful fantasy podcasts for 15 years. It's just, once you pick up that many subscribers, auto downloads get turned on. There was actually an Apple update at one point that wiped out a lot of the dormant subscribers, and it really affected a lot of the ad sales that go on during the show. But just learning the entire process, DFS starting out, with DraftKings, with FanDuel, Star Street was very big at the time, Draft Street was very big at the time, and they just started investing money into this content. And it was the first time I was really getting paid to do anything. Like, I didn't know how to sell ads. There wasn't a ton of third-party ad sellers for podcasts that would insert podcast ads dynamically at the time. It was just, you do this read and maybe put it in the edit afterwards. Who knows?
Right.
But when I launched I was the first employee of Fantasy Sports Network, the 24/7 fantasy sports channel, no longer in existence, that launched in 2013, 2014, whenever it was. But just being able to take control of that YouTube channel, I grew that YouTube channel to around 75,000 subs in around 2 years, with my show being the primary part of it. It was like, hey, I'm going to do my audio show as a video show. I'll do all the editing. I'll do all the graphical work. I'll get the guests. I'll switch the cameras. We'll figure this out. I'll do it all on my own. I'll prove to you that this is a concept that can work. And then when DraftKings and FanDuel just started throwing money around, DraftKings decided just to throw a bunch of money at me to come work for them instead. It's like, oh, like there's real money to be made here. Like I probably didn't have to get by making 32 grand Canadian a year at Fantasy Sports Network working 90 hours a week. There's a better way to do this. And because of DraftKings, I was able to do that.
Mm. Hey, looking back 15 years ago, like, would you even recognize what you were doing back then?
No, not a chance. The bones were still there. Like the first show I did was actually Tim and I. So we've been doing this show for 15 years. And then like Gary and getting in on the mix. I mean, obviously Gary and still around, we don't work as closely as we used to, but he's still on probably 12, 13 times a year. We do run. I mean, a part of my appeal to advertisers, to viewers, whoever it might be, it's both a good and a bad thing. Like, would I get as many views and downloads if I simply did 3 shows a week? The answer is maybe, because I give people a lot of different options on my feed for what they can pick and choose to what they want to listen to with 6, I mean, sometimes 7 shows during a week, one every single day coming out. No one's going to listen. I mean, there's probably a few crazies out there that are going to listen to each of the 7 shows that are probably on average an hour and a half long each. But if it's me, and like I have some of my favorite podcasts that also do a lot of bulk where, you know, they'll put out 7 shows a week. I'm like, oh, I'll listen to that one. I'll listen to that one. And I'll listen to that one. Those are the 3 that I really like. That am I separating my audience into like different groups who like different sorts of shows? Maybe. Whereas if I only had a limited option, would everyone just listen to everything? If I did a show on Monday, a show on Wednesday, and a show on Friday, let's say. Would each of those episodes get way more views and downloads versus getting more potentially just by going through the volume base? It's really difficult to tell. It's like in fantasy football where it's like, do you want the most efficient receiver? Or do you want the guy who gets a lot of volume? Right. I've always led by the idea in fantasy, in props, in DFS, in whatever it is. I really just want the volume guy because that's going to work.
Right. In the long run. You know, you had mentioned earlier that if you had started this 5 years ago, you don't know if you'd be able to pull this off. I mean, right now, obviously, the gambling space, sports betting space is littered with people trying to, like, earn a buck.
It's dead. The sports gambling space, it's not dead as in, like, no, there's just not money out there anymore.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Is there a little Pat Mayo out there who wants to start their own little thing? Do you think that it's possible to turn it into something profitable down the road?
Or are
we too late?
I don't think anyone is ever too late. And I do think that good content will always find its way in front of people.
Right.
Now, it depends on whether, like, I don't think that my content is good for 21-year-olds or 22-year-olds. They just simply do not. I'm not talking to that age group. Like, I've sort of grown up with my age group. When I started this, I was 24 years old. So I talk to a lot of, like, I've had people with me right now, like the guy who runs the custodies for us and keeps track of it and has for the past 8 years. He started listening to my show when he was 14. He's 28 now. It's crazy to think about it in those terms.
Sure.
But he started listening to it his first year, his freshman year of high school, and now he's graduated college.
It's crazy.
And he's been with the show the entire time, going through that way. Like, he's become an adult. Well, like, really, will I become an adult at the same time? So my demographics have just shifted along with me aging out. So I think when advertisers are looking, like, what is the primo? And I do golf as well. So it's not like, you know, there's a bunch of 22-year-olds out there clamoring for long form golf content, you guys yelling at each other who are 40 years old. So I do appreciate that my demo has stuck with me. I always appreciate my viewers have stuck with me. The biggest mistake I ever made, I've always had the same audio feed. I own that from the moment that I started it. But I put my video on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube channel, and I had to just cut it dry one day when I left and I went to DraftKings. And I probably could have started Mayo Media Network as an entity, that is a corporation, in order to just, you know, for business reasons, in order to keep my pay fewer taxes, put it that way. But I didn't start a channel. I was like, oh, DraftKings has 50,000 subscribers on it. Ooh, this is going to be great. I'm going to put my show on there. It's a brand new audience. All my audience is going to come over and my views are going to go through the roof. Now, my show did very well on the DraftKings YouTube channel, but had I have just started my YouTube channel then as Mayo Media Network, which they did give me the option to do and I didn't take. So, like, I don't want to start with 0. That sounds awful. I have 50,000 YouTube subs right now. I'd probably have 200,000 subs right now had I have just done that in 2017, which is one of the biggest mistakes that I've made.
Oh, it sounds like one of the few mistakes you've made, honestly. So
I made a lot of I have made a lot of mistakes over the
I
years. Learning from those mistakes is difficult. Like, be it signing contracts, getting the right lawyers to sign contracts, protecting your IP. I've gotten really lucky that I haven't been absolutely screwed over with a lot of this stuff. And now I'm very aware of just, I've seen people get screwed over so many times. I know where the signs are for this now. And the number one would just be like, anytime that you have a contract, get a lawyer to read it over. Even if it costs you more money than you think, it will save you way more money in the long run, because all these contracts are basically designed for you to give up all your rights.
Well, there's no contracts to be signed for this today. I appreciate you doing it. I got one last question for you, and I'm going to really roll the dice with this one. What's your currently your favorite show on television, and why is it Severance?
I'm not watching Severance,
You're not
actually.
watching Severance. Come on, Pat.
No, I mean, football just ended. I don't watch anything during football
Fair.
outside the challenge. So I've been watching the challenge pretty regularly for like the past 25 years. It's just on Wednesdays. I can like DVR it and fling through it in 40 minutes. But White Lotus is the only thing like new that I'm watching right now.
All right, so you're going to watch Severance, and then you'll thank me at some point in the future. I trust me on this one. That's it.
I hear it's okay.
Just trust me. Just trust me. Anyway, Pat, thank you so much for stopping by today. Really appreciate it. Anything? Where can we find you? Tell everyone where to find you.
Pat Mayo Experience Podcast, Mayo Media Network on YouTube, and hopefully other places coming in the near future.
You should know I got five of my attorney lineups through, and one's in first place currently in the best ball. So
Because you probably had guys at the Mexico Open.
I had three. That's
Three
it.
was good.
The three was great because I had like zero in like the other, in three of them. But whatever, we're getting there. And when I win, we'll have you back so to celebrate. Anyway, again, thank you so much, Pat.
Thanks for having me on.
I very much enjoyed your Severance setup there, and Pat negging you
He's
and
got to
your
watch it. That's the first thing
astonishment.
he's doing. I'm
He does.
stunned.
Yeah.
Remain stunned.
You know who else hasn't watched Severance is Bill Simmons. It came up on a podcast like a week ago, and he said to whoever was mentioning it, "I'm
Shocker.
save." He said, "I'm saving it. I'll watch it eventually."
Yeah.
But then here's the funny part: the very next podcast he hosted, he was interviewing the woman who wrote the Lorne Michaels book.
Right.
And she started talking about Severance, and she said, "You watch Severance, right?" And Simmons goes, "Yeah." Just totally lying in contradiction to what he'd said on the pod to someone else 2 days earlier. And it was a harmless white lie to keep the podcast moving, but you got to keep your lies straight, my man. You got to know what you've already told your audience. So anyway, I love Severance. You love Severance. Pat Mayo will love Severance when he watches it. My all-time favorite show, however, is still Breaking Bad. I am a legit obsessive. I have a problem. Over the weekend, for the first time, I played the Breaking Bad slot game on FanDuel Casino. They had a promotion, not even a good one. It was play $50 on
You
Breaking
get 5
Bad,
bucks,
and
right?
you get 15 20-cent spins on
Oh,
Huff and Puff.
Jesus.
So yeah, play 50 to get
Brutal.
$3 in free spins. I'm not even sure if that's a plus EV or EV plus promotion, but good enough to get me to play Breaking Bad for the first time. Gotta say, not a fan. Pretty lame slot. Now, I ran horribly. That always matters, as our guest a couple weeks ago, Ian O'Reilly, was telling us. Sometimes your first experience decides whether you like a slot or not. I lost like $30 just trying to play through 50. But then, with my $3 in free spins on Huff and Puff, or Hoof and Poof, as our Irish guest pronounced it, I hit a big bonus round and turned a 20-cent spin into $40 and came out ahead on
Ah,
the deal.
well,
So,
that's lovely.
Breaking Bad slot, not a fan, in part because I ran bad, in part because I just didn't think it was much of a game. But Breaking
You might even say you broke bad.
I certainly ran bad.
Yeah.
But then I ran good on Hoof and Poof. Yeah, the show, however, still the greatest. Nothing else compares for me. Although season 2, episode 7 of Severance last week was pretty close to a peak Breaking Bad level for a single episode.
So good. I've watched it twice already. I plan on
Yep.
watching it a third time
Oh wow,
tonight's episode.
you're gonna oh so you're gonna lead into the new episode with a third
Yeah.
viewing of the wow, that's bold. I did do the two. I've done the two for every episode this season. This was the one that it really, like, you have to do a second viewing of this episode to
Yes.
properly appreciate it. Like, I
Yes.
liked it initially. I was like, wow, I think that was really good. It wasn't until the second viewing that I was like, okay, that's a Pantheon level episode of TV.
I'm already in a panic because next Thursday night I got long-standing plans with like a bunch of high school friends. So like I'm not going to be able to watch it like when it drops at 9 o'clock, and I'm going to be a little tipsy, I'm sure. It's the penultimate episode of the season. I'm legitimately nervous to the point where I'm like, maybe I cancel, but like that's a bridge too far.
It's a bridge too far to cancel. It's not a bridge too far to think about canceling. Right. I think that's a fair place to be wondering whether maybe you should, but yeah, then the real debate is if you actually come home a little drunk, does that mean I'm not going to be able to properly absorb the episode? I should just go to sleep and get up early and watch it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know. I've a week's worth of decision making here ahead of me.
We still have episode 8 tonight to get through first.
Let's take a beat. Yes. Let's just calm down. All right. Yeah. Anyway, go to CasinoReports.com because I spoke with Joe Brennan Jr. this week. I love Joe. He's one of the true architects of the space that helped legalize sports betting. He was in it back in 08, you know, crafting legislation in New Jersey, trying to start to upend pass. But, and obviously he did, you know, legitimate, honest to goodness, sports betting Hall of Famer. He's a Philly guy. He loves pointing out the fact that he's a Philly guy. And I get why. This dude is a bruiser, man. He loves being in the trenches. This is a guy, like, in another life, he's going toe-to-toe with Spider Rico in a dingy gym, you know? Nice. But instead of dingy gyms, he's getting ready to go toe-to-toe with the sports betting industry, in the boardrooms, in the books themselves, across the table from the players, sitting in the diner, you know? He's trying to fix the American online sports betting industry. Some might say he's tilting at windmills. I kind of think I'm going to end up running another story in a few years about all the changes that he kind of brought to the table. He knows everybody. You know, I think people listen to Joe when he talks, you know. And the sports betting ecosystem, while certainly not dying, isn't exactly a picture of robust health these days, you know. And in the article that I wrote, he kind of alluded to the sports betting business kind of like leaving its adolescent phase right now, you know. And so I'll say this, you know, sports betting, you know, online sports betting in America is a teenager. You know, it's not an honor student anymore. You know, it's not a burnout quite, but you know, it started vaping. Its grades are slipping a little bit. It's time for someone to grab it by the scruff of its neck and give it a good talking to. And I think Brennan is the guy for that. I can't wait to see what comes out of his talking tour. I can't wait to see what ideas he comes up with. I can't wait to see if some of the sports books pay attention. Right. Until next week, we're low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.